devais-je m'en aller ou bien rester?
Figured out the way to save the Olympics. That's fair to everybody and keeps everybody's interest in balance. Here's my proposal. It's very simple. All of the athletes who are on drugs have to run backwards. It's time for Sport Ado avec Mr. Arnoldine and myself, Louis Gascon de la Merde, French sports discussion segment. Mr. Stevens is off today and tomorrow and the next day.
He's off every day. He's here, too.
Yeah, he's off. Sometimes a little off, sometimes a little on. Anyway, that's my plan. I would not just run backwards, but a hamster that John Kerry rescued was Vanessa's hamster, and who John Kerry performed CPR on. And this was all described last night at the Democratic National Convention. If you think I'm joking, by the way, you're wrong. I mean, you're wrong about the idea that anyway that there was a hamster, and the hamster was described in one of the speeches. This is actually Alexandra Kerry. In her speech, explaining this whole situation. But anyway, my understanding is that Licorice, the hamster, has an op-ed piece in the New York Times tomorrow. He has a somewhat different version of events. And I thought it might be better just to let that piece run, and then we'll talk about it on Monday. But he doesn't have quite the same story about what happened as what you heard last night. Assuming that you did hear it. I would imagine. I wonder how many people do watch very much of the convention coverage. Do you know how you thought, what you thought about that speech last night, or anything else you want to talk about as well? There's lots going on in the rest of the world. It's just that those of us who've been watching the convention, you know. I'm going to go see the Manchurian Candidate. And I want to say that I'm an admirer of the original. And I think we're getting dangerously close to the kinds of movies that should not, there should be a list of movies that cannot be remade. I mean, I questioned whether Psycho should be remade. Because, I mean, that's my, you know, as one of my friends said, what are they going to do, like remake North by Northwest? Mm-hmm. I mean, some of these movies, which are more or less perfect, or at least so completely, I don't even know how to put it, but I mean, they're so completely rooted in the American popular imagination. Why would you want to remake them? You're going to do like a new Casablanca? You're going to do African Queen with Ben Affleck and Natalie Portman? And Manchurian Candidate is borderline. The original sort of, the original John, is it John Frankenheimer? I think it is. The original John Frankenheimer Manchurian Candidate is almost in that category of a movie that really shouldn't be remade. But I'm going to go see it anyway because I'm shallow and I have nothing to do. Let's talk to Daryl in Hartford. Hi, Daryl.
Hi, Colin. Listen, have you noticed how all the liberals and the Democrats are starting to suck up to Bill O'Reilly and Fox News during this convention?
Not really, no, but I don't watch Bill O'Reilly and Fox News.
Oh, you don't? Well, you know, he's the big bad
guy. No, I know who he is. I mean, Bill O'Reilly used to work here in Hartford. I knew him then.
Oh, really?
I knew him personally, yeah.
He's becoming one of the most powerful men in America.
Yeah.
And now the Democrats and the liberals are all realizing that it's more important for them to get their face in front of a big audience than their hatred of him.
Well,
and
you know, it's not in front of a big audience. It's in front of swing voters. And they got to go where they think the swing voters are. I mean, they got to go mainstream first. Believe me, nobody ever passed up Tom Brokaw to be on Bill O'Reilly, and nobody ever will. Well, I mean, first of all, you got to go after the, I mean, these Fox News, I don't even know what the size of its audience is, but even if it's leading the pack on cable, it still doesn't have a very big audience. I mean, the audiences for these cable news operations are incredibly small. So believe me, nobody's ever passed up Tom Brokaw or Dan Rather or Peter Jennings to go on with Bill O'Reilly, and nobody ever will. But
that Michael Moore debate between him and O'Reilly was watched by millions of people.
I promise you, I don't even have the numbers right now, but if you knew how small these audiences are, it would blow your mind. I mean, I think Fox is currently, you know, in the lead, but still being in the lead on these cable-specific kinds of shows, it doesn't mean as much as you think it does. And to, you know, to this day, the big three still are, they are the big three. So, I mean, And so if you're a Democrat, you want to go after mainstream voters, you want to go after the people who are somewhere in the middle, you're unlikely to get a lot of swing voters out of Fox. You might find a few over there.
Why do you think liberals are such a failure on talk radio? You and Bruce are probably hanging on by your fingernails, but you're some of the few.
Well, first of all, we're not hanging on by our fingernails. One thing you should understand, well, we can't really talk about ratings anymore. We're not allowed to. But once again, if let's imagine that there is such a thing as ratings. And if you know anybody in this business, go take a look at a ratings book sometime. Assuming there is such a thing. There may not be such a thing. I don't even know. But you'd be surprised.
How are you doing against Sean Hannity down the dial?
You would be surprised, first of all, how we're doing relative to him, that person you just mentioned, and how we're doing relative to, say, the person who precedes us on the air. That would blow your mind, too. I mean, I actually do know the answer to those questions, and those things would blow your mind. Now, let me just say this about liberals and talk radio. I think one reason that liberals and talk radio have been kind of a failure is that talk radio exists on AM radio. And for the most part, liberals, and I hate these words, liberals and conservatives, anyway, I wish we didn't use them. But let's say, you know, people who tend to vote Democrat. Well, we'll do it that way. People who tend to vote Democrat don't listen to a lot of AM radio. They're not even aware of AM radio. You know, people who tend to vote Democrat, particularly like in a place like this in New England, people who tend to vote Democrat listen to NPR and they listen to books on tape and they listen to, you know, Bruce Springsteen CDs in their car. And they just don't listen to AM radio. They don't even know it exists. I mean, I can tell you that I went out and I gave a speech to a MoveOn.org group out in Litchfield 3 or 4 weeks ago. And at the end of the speech, and, you know, I mean, I give a pretty good speech. At the end of the speech, people were like coming up to me, flocking around me, saying, well, that's amazing. You're on the radio? Really? There's somebody like you on the radio? What station are you on? And I said, I'm on WTIC. And they said, well, what's that? Now, WTIC is a 75-year-old radio station. It's got 50,000 watts of power. I mean, we're not like a big secret. But the people who tend to be in that particular ideological demographic, they just never listen to AM radio. They don't do it. So that's one of the problems. Another problem is, you know, talk radio, as it is conceived, was conceived as an angry medium. I mean, it started out as an angry medium. It started out as a medium, as I'm fond of saying, that was directed at, you know, I mean, its core audience in its earliest days were pissed off salesmen stuck in traffic in overheated cars who didn't sell enough widgets that day and were really mad and was wondering who to blame, and the answer turned out to be welfare queens.
Well, listen, now, I just lost my train of thought, but it's the elitism of liberals that puts people off, I believe, and why the conservatives. I mean, Sean Hannity, to me, I watch him and I agree with a lot of the stuff he says, but I think he's kind of a lightweight, to tell you the truth. I've seen him lose a lot of debates against Charlie Rangel, but Charlie Rangel kisses his butt because he wants to get back on Fox News again, you know? But I don't think you guys even know that you're being elitist. But you just don't connect with the audience the way a Sean Hannity does. Anybody out in the street feels that they can walk right up to Sean Hannity and they know him personally.
Well, I don't want anybody on the street walking up to me. I have serious psychological problems. And, you know, I mean, I think you're probably right about that. I think it's, you know, there are liberal guys who kind of have more of a common touch. I mean, your Jim Hightower types and stuff like that. But even when they do that and do it reasonably well, they don't seem to find the audience. I had some ready answers to your question, but to tell you the truth, it's a mystery to me. Because, I mean, it really isn't true that conservatives are the only ones with a folksy touch. For example, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Bill Clinton. You know, find me a conservative who's had that much of a folksy touch in the last 35 years. And also cutting it as an elitist, too. I mean, he was both.
That's true. I would agree with you there.
So, I mean, it's not impossible to be liberal or Democrat or whatever you want to call it and have a folksy touch. There's a missing component to this whole question, and I don't know what it is. I mean, I mean, I've got a couple of answers, and I spat them out the minute you asked the question, but I really don't know the full answer to the question. I've always also had the suspicion that, I mean, I can only go by most of the Democrats I know. Most of the Democrats I know don't want to hear a purely political radio show. Now, it may be that George Bush will finally create an appetite for that kind of thing, because I think people want to hear a purely political radio show the more panicky they get about the state of politics. And I think, you know, for example, the Clinton era made conservatives so panicky that Rush's ratings went way up. Not that not the ratings are a real thing, but
that Beckel, that big Democrat, Bob Beckel, he's been on Sean Hannity a couple of times, right?
Yeah.
And he says on his TV show, and he refers to himself listening to Hannity during the day, to Hannity's radio show. Why isn't he listening to that new network that they put out? It's probably failing and falling flat on its
face. It hasn't done very well, and to tell you the truth, most of the shows on that network, I would concede, are not all that good. And I think it's because, I mean, and I do think that for the most part, the audience for those kinds of shows doesn't want to hear a purely political show. And, you know, I've been doing a political show all week this week because we're in the middle of a freaking Democratic National Convention. But if you listen to me and Bruce on a regular basis, you know, we'll do entire shows where we maybe mention politics for a total of 10 minutes out of 3 hours. And we talk about a whole bunch of other stuff, you know.
Those are the days I turn it off. Those are the days I tune you out.
Yeah, because you're a junkie. Well, what can we do? We have to take a break. We shall return.
Didn't help. All right, joining us now is Bill Curry. Bill Curry is back from Boston after safeguarding the interests of the people of Connecticut at the Democratic National Convention. Is that what you were doing?
Yeah.
Makes for good radio.
Yeah.
Anyway,
actually, they didn't need to be safeguarded. It was the one place for 1 week the interests of the people didn't need to be safeguarded by anybody in particular.
Well, anytime you get Terry McAuliffe around, you got to be a little bit careful. You know, you could wind up with a Deidre Shelton or something like that. First of all, in some ways, asking somebody who was at the convention how they think the convention went, there's a flaw in that, because I think when you're at the convention, you don't see the same thing that people watching television do.
You don't see anything at all, actually. I mean, you see the stage if you've got a decent seat, but being at a national convention, you're less well-informed than the average person. Even in the 96 convention, when I was with the president, the degree to which people on the inside are turning on cable news to figure out what just happened, and if it's better than, you know, the president's own communication system within the convention, it's a lot better than any gossip you pick up as a delegate.
Right.
And so you're there just kind of wondering. You're just in this massive sort of political Mardi Gras, networking heaven. I've been writing a piece for the New Britain Herald for Sunday, and it made me stop and think about this, and it just that how little perspective you have in the outside world. You come back from the convention saying this is where we're, you know, this is how we think we came out of this. You come back from the convention in a real sense wondering. And it occurred to me that it's not unlike the lives we all live. You know, you're exhausted and overextended, and you're not getting any regular news source, and you're only talking to people you already agree with.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just sort of like life, only cube.
Yeah. In the case of me at the 2000 convention, you could add barking and incontinent, at least by Thursday.
Yeah.
But that was just me, and I have my own special way of living.
Too bad they held the convention that 1 week a month without half the fee, you know?
That's true. Yeah. But it exacerbated it. It made it worse than it usually is.
Sure.
So factoring for all of that, you and I already talked this morning on the phone about the Kerry speech, which you basically thought was an effective speech, right?
Having said what I just said, and realizing that I'm someone coming out of the bubble, I actually think this was one of the most effective, not one of the most inspiring. Okay, if this had been a revival tent, you know, nobody would have come to Jesus over it. But this was the president of the Yale Debating Society. When I saw there was a Clinton reunion party on Sunday night that I went to, and Clinton, who can, you know, get to the gist of a thing so well, just said, Kerry's job is to close the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, I thought he went in, and it wasn't there to inspire the faithful, and it wasn't even there to introduce him as a person so much to the American people. He had two jobs. One was to tell people not only was he an adequate commander-in-chief, but a preferable commander-in-chief. It's worth switching in midstream to get one this much better when you need it. And secondly, and very differently, he had to make a case to the American middle class that's lost income during a supposed recovery 2 years in a row, that the Democratic Party again has concrete, believable things it will do for the middle class to make life a little bit better. And in making it a kind of Clinton State of Union speech, having to cram in some detail to this, which can collapse a speech. I thought he pulled it off. In addition, he showed a pulse, which, of course, won over the cardiologist vote.
Right. Yeah.
He showed a human being.
He managed to separate himself somewhat from Ed Muskie in the sense that he appeared to be living.
And it's also kind of like, I think a problem for Republicans, and I hate to just, people don't want to think tactically so much, but a problem for Republicans is not unlike the problem that Democrats had at the end of the 1980 race when they had said that Ronald Reagan is, on his face, unfit to be president of the United States. And then Reagan showed up and seemed okay, and seemed just fine, and that's all they needed to go the other way. The Republican position this time repeats that Democratic mistake. They're telling people two things about Kerry. One, that he's just not a good candidate, and the sort of the personal piece, that's not just Republicans, that's the media. But two, that he really can't be the commander-in-chief. And this is an even greater misassessment, because in a time of crisis, supporting on their part a leader who has stumbled badly, facing a person so obviously prepared for just that part of the job, I think they've made the wrong argument.
I think it would be effective also if they were to crawl some of that stuff on the screen while the candidate's speaking. For example, while he was speaking about foreign affairs and stuff, maybe in your exact words, what he's really saying here.
He's not just a good commander-in-chief.
He's a preferable candidate, commander-in-chief, particularly, switching in midstream. Worth it to get that much better a one. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. If they would crawl those things, for those of us who don't always get subtext, it would be helpful.
For you especially.
Yeah, me especially.
Yeah, for whom it has to be, like, really plain. I also think, by the way, the other really interesting thing about the whole convention, and I've always been struck how the Republicans are like this cyborg. Every Republican correspondent, candidate, staffer is on message every morning. It's just like one big brain.
You mean cyborg, but in a loving way.
In an admiring way.
Admiring.
And in this case, whether it was Clinton, Gore, Carter, Obama, Edwards, Kerry, there were two pieces of this that were throughout the convention. One was about as civil a deconstruction of the Bush presidency as you could ask for. They managed a very civil and positive tone, but made the argument, to swing voters, is this what you bought? Is this the best you think you can do with terrorism in Iraq? How's your family doing? Is this what was promised? Is this guy uniting us, or does it feel different? And they made that, they took advantage of the whole 4 days to make that case. And the second thing they said was specifically the issue of, are we to be united or divided? It's no accident that after 4 years of President Bush, we regard ourselves as a country of blue and red states that don't understand each other. Does it really feel that way? And wouldn't you rather live in a community? And do you remember when we did? And in part, this is like an optical illusion created by the political classes to maintain their bases. And they go back to people and say, no, you have values that are deeper than political values. And they draw you together. And enough of this. Let's move on to something else. And I think that's very powerful. I think it's very true. I think it's very appealing.
Well, Obama was the one who did that the best.
He completely nailed that idea. Yeah, he absolutely did. But Clinton did it when Clinton, a brilliant statement that they need to divide us in order to stay in power. We don't need to be divided. And then all of Kerry's speech just saying there's something deeper here. This is the United States of America. Obama did the best job at it, but the whole message was on that. And we have had a politics that just puts everybody in a different, useless category and breeds animosity. And it's gotten worse almost every year of my life. And I really thought that, maybe I'm too caught up in the convention spirit and, wouldn't be surprising. But it felt like that the convention and Kerry spoke to something a little better.
Yeah. What was the Clinton reunion party like?
It was packed. Everybody got a book and help getting it to your car.
There had to be enough room for the
everybody
people.
Everybody got a book and a dolly to bring it out.
Well, actually, that was sort of the slogan of the Clinton administration: a book and a dolly.
Yeah.
For every
and, it was the best food I had during the convention. Mm-hmm. It was a beautiful view of the city,
mm-hmm.
and he and Hillary and Chelsea all came. And
were you allowed to eat your food, or did the president come around and eat it off
the, that is how I, it is true. The very first time I ever met Clinton, I was comptroller in 19, he was running in 92. We were having a dinner after a speech he gave mm-hmm. at like 2 in the morning, and he did reach over and say, are you done with that? And, of course, you know me. I mean, really, I wasn't, you know, frankly.
I've read you off your plate.
But,
broken fingers.
But you know how politically astute I am.
Yeah.
I suggest, yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
I'm done. Yeah, go right ahead.
Sure, you eat anything you want.
And can I, and if that whole governor's thing doesn't work out, do you think I could have a job?
And it worked.
Yeah.
It was
it went just that way.
Always give somebody a little bit more of your food. You never know if they're going to become president of the United States. We're visiting with Bill Curry here. And he's our senior political analyst and one of Connecticut's most beloved figures, or at least that's our story, and we're sticking to it right now. And up at 4:40, what we're going to do is we're going to do sports and politics à trois. Arnold Dean has been watching the convention pretty faithfully. He's going to join us and talk about all of that stuff. The Arod and the Veritek and the various other Red Sox and Yankees are suspended from baseball. They will be fighting tonight at Foxwoods, however, and broadcast on ESPN2. Time for Sports at Trois, the very French sports discussion segment, with some politics, too, as well. Avec Monsieur Bill Curry, Monsieur Donald Dean, and myself, Louis Gascon de la Mer.
That's a good starting point. What do you think was
no worse?
They're taken by the Yankees, and you know how they play. So
we didn't have time to be too interested in baseball because we were too busy up in Boston hanging out with our new friend Bill Russell.
I can't even say. First of all, I did have the honor and privilege of shaking hands and saying hello to Bill Russell
at the convention.
Yeah, he was at the press party on the Saturday night before the convention. I was walking through there.
I may want to put my own gloss on this when he's done.
And Colin Bill Russell and says, excuse me, Mr. Russell, wouldn't it be nice for you to meet the former gubernatorial candidate of the state of Connecticut? At which point I froze. Now, at that point, I did, and perhaps inadvisedly, give Russell a few tips on what it was like for me playing pivot for St. Justice back in the Hartford early days. And he
looked
enthralled. A little confused. And it might have been just his inability to hear me. It was very exciting, and if you ever introduce me to anyone like that again, I'll kill you.
Well, the thing was that before that, really you said something about, maybe you should introduce me to Bill Russell. I said, really? You want me to be your people?
No. I said I'd like to meet Bill Russell. It was sort of like,
I said, do you want me to be your people? You said, yeah.
I wanted a steak then, but there wasn't a restaurant around. Yeah. No, I didn't want
I was
to
like from
there.
Your posse. I went over, yeah. I said,
let me say, for 30 seconds of my life, for 30 seconds of my adult life, I had an entourage.
Yeah.
Okay, and boy, did that not work
you
out.
You sort of endeared yourself to Bill Russell by asking for an autograph because he loves giving autographs.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, he detests it. He will not sign them.
Oh, right. I didn't know that.
Yeah. If you have one of his, you've got a classic. Yeah.
And then after that, we went in and we saw two legends in the space of like 60 seconds because we walked down into the hall and there was Little Richard. So Bill Russell and Little Richard.
Bill Russell carrying his legend a little better, I thought.
Big Bill and Little Richard.
Little Richard, and I go into this in my column on Sunday in Northeast Magazine, is still very freaked out that he didn't get enough money for inventing rock and roll. So he's like constantly worrying that people are bootlegging and stuff. And he stopped the concert about six times.
Because of the Jumbotron.
Jumbotron cameras and stuff like that. He said, turn those off and, you know.
Completely
flipping off.
It was pretty funny. Although, more to the point, he didn't get a little money. He got no money. He got nothing. I understand it, but there comes a time to let go.
And the next morning, we were at Harvard.
Little Richard is 71?
71, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And he'd say, and I never made no money, and people are still stealing from me, and turn those cameras off.
He got really worked out. I thought it kind of took a little of the air out of that concert.
No, I thought it added to it.
About the third time he stopped to talk about intellectual property rights and so forth and how he'd been screwed. It made it less festive.
And then the next morning, we were at the panel discussion in Harvard, and Dan Rather started doing the same thing.
Yeah.
I never got no money. I turned those cameras off.
But when Dan Rather came to invented rock and roll, it was just at its place. I didn't believe it.
Well, tell me, you were at the Fleet Center, compared to a Bruins game or a Celtics. Well, judging by the current Celtics team, maybe they don't go into this. What was more exciting?
There is still the
bad luck right there. I knocked my keyboard off. It's also bad luck to perform at the Mouth Association on a hamster. Now, we heard on Thursday night that John Kerry, when one of his daughter's hamsters fell into the water off a pier, jumped into the water, rescued the hamster, performed CPR on the hamster, may have performed mouth-to-mouth resuscitation on the hamster, and that the hamster, licorice, then rose from the dead. Joining us now, however, there's been relatively little heard from the hamster himself. His name is Licorice, and in a WTIC News Talk 1080 interview exclusive right now, we are now joined by phone by Licorice the hamster. Hello, Licorice.
How's it going?
It's going just fine. First of all, I wanted to ask whether the account that was given at the convention in Boston of your rescue at sea, whether that was basically accurate.
Well, I have to be honest with you. A couple of things. I'm old, and I'm a hamster. And all I really remember is I was on the boat, in my cage, in that little damn sailor outfit that Vanessa put on me. And the next thing is, it's dark, it's cold, and I can't breathe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me because people are asking me, I'm getting all this press stuff coming at me, and they're saying, did I actually get the CPR? Did I get the mouth-to-mouth? Listen, I don't remember a damn thing.
Yeah.
All I know, I'm drowning, and then I got Lurch right in my face going, live, damn you, live! and I'm back.
Yeah.
And I owe the guy my life. Right.
And has he been gracious about it? Has he asked you to make campaign appearances for him? I mean, like all the Swift Boat guys are doing stuff right now. Are you being asked to do certain things?
Well, the thing that's really bothering me is I don't hear much out of him, but that's okay. He's a busy man, you know. He might be president. But all these other things are happening around me. Like, there's these guys.
Mm-hmm.
They're calling themselves sailboat rodents for truth.
Yeah.
A bunch of rats.
Yeah.
And they're going around saying none of this is happening. Kerry's a liar and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I kind of piss them out. You know, they're just a bunch of pellet heads, those guys. Don't listen to them.
Yeah. So these are Republican operatives who claim they know something more about this whole incident.
Oh, yeah. You know, I had a real peaceful life for a couple of decades now.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know this story was going to come out. And I didn't think Allie even remembered. She was just, you know, so young at the time. She's a crazy kid.
Right.
Now all of a sudden, the phone's ringing off the hook. And I can't do much other than eat and, you know, and poop on newspaper. That's pretty much it's my job.
Yeah. Well, they say the same thing about Ben Affleck, and yet he has a pretty big role with the campaign as well.
That's a point well taken.
Yeah. And how about the daughters themselves, Alexandra and Vanessa? What are your memories? Were they basically good people?
Oh, I'm reliving.
Is he pooping on the paper right now? Is that what he's doing?
Sorry about that. Yeah. Every once in a while when I hear Vanessa's name,
yeah,
I start to get all worried. They're good. You know, I've been following them around all my life. And I kind of wish at some point they maybe release me. I don't even like being in a cage. But, you know, they're doing what they can.
Yeah. And I guess the last question I wanted to ask was, would you be willing to kind of watch and comment on one or two other things as the campaign unfolds? I was particularly wondering whether you'd be willing to watch a little of the Republican National Convention for us and give us some of your thoughts at that time.
Boy, that's a tall order. I don't think you got some kind of finger food or something like that.
I'm sure we could make it worth your while in the snack department.
I'm your guy.
All right. Thanks, Licorice the Hamster. Thanks very much for joining us today. I know this can't have been easy for you to talk about, so I appreciate you taking the time.
It wasn't, but it was good anyway.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. One very courageous and honest hamster. That's Licorice the Hamster.
Magnificent beef. What other strange powers must he possess?
Well, we'll have to find that out later. That was the tick.
Yeah.
So,
when they were talking about this the other night, was Ted Kennedy kind of squirming in his
seat? It's been an uncomfortable time for him.
Yeah.
Well, I actually... that is something that's a sort of... Republican, you know, blogs and stuff like Free of all those things that are like Ray and Buddy Reed and stuff like that. They've been,
I'm sure.
They've been bringing up the Chappaquiddick thing a lot. Anyway, so now we have a little bit of time to take phone calls and to converse among ourselves. Our numbers are 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC. I should warn you that while you were away, Helmecki found this stuff. I think it was Helmecki. It was left on my desk anyway. And I can't remember the name of it anymore. But I'm high on it. It's like the energy drinks that we used to have, but it's not. It's like Red Bull in the sense of some of the things that are in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it has even more things in it. It does have like stuff that they took out of Kitty Dukakis' neck, for example.
And it's not fizzy. It's not a soda. It comes in these, it looks like Jello shots or something. It comes in these little tubs.
You found this on your desk?
Yeah, Helmecki got it. Didn't Helmecki get it, Bobby? Wasn't it Helmecki?
He's not even there.
Oh, okay.
He's busy.
But anyway, I think Helmecki's the source of this stuff. And I forget what it's called. I announced it on the air on Friday because they took it. And let me just tell you, I am whacked. I mean, you drink 2 ounces of this stuff, and I am whacked out of my mind.
Really?
Right now, I am just completely whacked. I could be the Manchurian candidate. I could be up on the roof.
I have to do.
I could be pulling a, you know, 100% Buddy Vicevich with the gun on the roof, you know, just from taking this stuff.
There's a new Residence Inn up in Avon.
Yeah.
It's been open for a couple of months.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for a place to live because our condo just like, you know, water. So I dropped in there Friday. And I didn't say who I was or anything. I'm in the elevator. I'm talking to this woman, very nice woman. She looks at me and she said, you're on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah.
She recognized your voice.
Yeah. And the next thing she said, you're on with Colin. Yeah. And then it was like, he's crazy. He's whacked out. He's in a nutcase. He's that. I said, yeah, pretty much.
Then did she ask you for my phone number? Because that's usually the next thing that happens.
No.
No, it didn't lead up to that.
But, I mean, I'm sure I'll be talking with him again, so yeah. I could pass that along if you'd like.
No.
Very attractive one.
No, I still don't know. They're all sexual killers.
And she, I think at one time, worked in radio sales.
Oh, really? Did you get the feeling Doobie was suggesting that I was drunk at that party?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I thought was suggested.
I resent that. I wasn't. I mean.
Well, I mean, I knew that.
Yeah. If I, you know, believe me, if I'd gotten hammered, people would have known it. I would have burned down that tent or something. You know, I would have done something memorable. Well, anyway, I am just this stuff. I couldn't be more whack.
What's it called?
I can't remember.
You can't even remember that?
No, but it's on the desk. I was with the box. There's a box of these things. You want to try one?
That's okay.
It is the worst tasting stuff in the
that's
world.
That's okay.
Yeah, but you're just.
No, I remember the last time.
This stuff makes Red Bull look like fizzy. So,
well, right? I don't need that. up with enough problems. I don't need that.
As long as we're talking about licorice, the hamster, you know, one overlooked thing about the Democratic National Convention is that during, not only were they both there, but apparently there was a moment of healing and reconciliation and burden sharing and baggage unloading between Ben Affleck and P. Diddy. Both men who've been affianced and then spurned by J-Lo. So, it just proves that John Kerry is a uniter, that he was able to bring those two guys together and to have them touch fists and say, you know, okay, we've both been down that road. And obviously, the question is, can the Republicans get Chris Judd for their convention? But there aren't that many sort of J-Lo cast-offs left, but there are some. And actually, there might be a lot of them. Anyway, our numbers are 522-WTIC. Oh, and then... the Edwardses go out for their...
Did you say you took this stuff today?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I realize I have... I mean...
I know.
My attention deficit disorder isn't... It's pretty bad most days. Now I'm like a housefly.
Uh-huh.
You know? I'm just buzzing around. It's sort of weird. They went on the road. Edwardses and the Careys. They went out on the road right after the convention. And they took Ben with them. Which is kind of, I mean, I could understand if they took, say, Richard Holbrooke with them, you know, but taking Ben Affleck, why would you take Ben? Yeah. Why would he be the fifth that you would take?
That's a good point.
So anyway, they go to Wendy's, you know, because that's where the Edwardses have their anniversary dinner. You know about this, right? They would just celebrate their anniversary every year at Wendy's. So they go to Wendy's, and the Edwardses have cheeseburgers, fries, and Diet Coke, and they shared a Frosty for dessert.
Uh-huh.
And the Edwardses had a chili. The Careys had chili. They each had chili. It has been speculated by others that Theresa Hines Carey, because of all the Botox, can't open her mouth wide enough to eat a cheeseburger. So they have to have...
That's pretty cool.
They have to have the chili, but...
Not a straw?
Yeah, it's not my joke, actually.
With no beans.
And so anyway, this is the thing that bothered me. Okay, so the two running mates, they worked the room a little bit, and there were some Marines there who actually turned out to support Bush, and that didn't go too well. But worse than that, Ben goes outside, and some people are talking smack to him about J-Lo. They're like yelling, I don't know, it's just he faced a few catcalls outside about his canceled engagement to Jennifer Lopez, the actual nature of these catcalls.
I mean, there's no tax.
Yeah.
But, you know, but hey.
You're still on your own.
I just want to say on behalf of all of America, all Americans, to these people making these cat calls, hey, shut up, all right? I mean, Ben has been through enough, I think. You know, it's bad enough what he's been through.
Right. And on top of that, he's a Red Sox fan.
He's a Red Sox fan. And they suck.
How much abuse could you possibly take in 1 year?
J-Lo dumped him, and then he doesn't need people. And keep in mind who these people are. These are people who hang out at Wendy's. It's not like, I mean, it's unlikely that these people have been engaged to, like, Claudia Schiffer or something. I mean, this is somebody in the parking lot at Wendy's. And those people have some right to talk to an acclaimed movie star like Ben Affleck.
Wait a minute. Acclaimed movie star? Are we going?
That might be
just a little overboard.
Right. But anyway, it just feels to me that Ben has had enough heartache.
Yeah, well, I would agree with that.
Talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, you can taunt him about mediocre. You can, like Geely, you can taunt him about. Okay.
Bruce and Colin shall return.
We should kill Arnold. I think we should kill Arnold for that. I mean, you know what he does? He says, it's a surprise guest. Don't think he's got freaking Nomar Garcia Parra up there on the wall with him.
No,
or something like that.
I didn't think so.
And yeah, you're saying to me, no, he's got
I
like...
I said sausage bender myself, yeah. But, so, you know.
So then he says, it's Carl Bean? Is that the guy's
Carl
name?
Carl Bean, yeah.
It's Carl Bean.
Carl's a good guy.
He's a PA announcer. But then Arnold says, having sprung this on the air on us as a surprise, he says, do you have any questions for Carl?
So what do you ask?
You're a PA announcer. It's like, do I have any questions for the person who reads the announcements over the system at my son's middle school? No. What's your real job?
No.
He turns on the microphone and he reads the batting order. They could teach a minor bird to do that. I mean, it turns out as a person. Okay, but you have to go anyway.
The new
you know who do appear to like one another? Is Susan Bresowitz and her husband Strippy.
What's good?
They were at this party that I was at on Saturday night, and as I mentioned before, I did dance with Susan Bresowitz, and it was, you know, there was a fair amount of heat generated. But on the other hand, she danced quite a bit with Strippy.
One would hope.
And I was the only other man courageous enough to dance with her. But, you know, when they dance together, you can tell whether people like each other or not when they're dancing. And she and Strippy, they have a genuine affection for one another. And I was happy to see that. I was glad to see that. You know, nobody would believe this. Nobody who knew me would believe this. Nobody around here would believe this, except for people who went to the WTIC Christmas party. But I'm a lot of fun in a party. I mean, I realize I'm not a lot of fun in almost any other circumstance. And that I'm not nice to people, and I don't talk to people, and... Uh-huh. I don't look at people, and I don't care about people. I mean, I've heard this chapter and verse, but actually at a party, I'm a lot of fun.
That, I would believe that.
Yeah, I like dancing, and I'm lively and fun, and I'm there to enjoy myself, and so I was at this party on Saturday night. I was a bunch of fun.
Yeah.
You ask anybody who's there. Mm-hmm. And I was lively and vivacious. But the rest of the time, I admit this, and so, we have this woman work relatively newly employed here, who, I won't say what her name is, but she's talking to Bobby. Bobby, our producer, has done a lot to contribute to the image of me as a sociopathic, withdrawn misanthrope.
Which, and why would he do that? Because
I
who knows better than he would.
So this woman is mentions to Bobby that she likes my writing. She likes my writing in the Hartford Current and stuff like that. And he said, well, my advice to you is not tell him. Don't tell him that. Don't give him any compliments. Don't try to talk to him about his writing.
Which woman is this? I know this person?
Yeah, you know this person, you know. But I mean, and Bobby's absolutely right. I don't want people coming up to me and talking to me about my writing.
For that matter, pretty much anything else.
Yeah. So Bobby just said, don't look at him. Don't tell him. Don't give him any compliments. He won't like that.
It's like dealing with a police dog. Don't make eye contact.
Right, exactly.
You know, they may think it is a challenge.
Just let me sniff you, all right?
Yeah,
that's right, you know, if you work around here, you work at these four radio stations, don't talk to me. Let me come up to you and sniff you. If I'm interested in
right.
you,
you'll know.
Yeah, you'll know. You'll find out. But, I mean, it's...
Don't call us.
Yeah.
We'll call you.
But speaking from my point of view, it's disheartening to hear that I'm not questioning the validity of that characterization. I'm not, you know, I understand that's exactly how I do behave, and that Bobby's assessment of the right way to behave towards me was dead on. I'm not I'm not questioning any of that.
This is, after all.
It's disheartening to hear that that's true, though.
This is Bobby that we're talking about.
Yeah, but there's also no one in this building that sticks up for you, Colin.
Yeah,
you
do stick up with, yeah. And I'm also saying what you said to that woman was absolutely right. I don't want her talking to me about my writing. I don't want any compliments. I don't want to.
If you'd like, I would speak to her on your behalf. if you'd like.
I mean, I could speak to everybody on my behalf.
I could smooth this all over.
Well,
no,
there's
time.
Anything to smooth over.
Well, no, but what you do, you go and you jump all over these people at Light 100.5. These are all people that I know. And then they come to me and they go like, what was that for?
Wait, you mean you said jump all over them? I mean, I just mentioned how boring the radio station is.
Well, that and some other stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, that's fine. I mean, and I think they should.
So you said to speak to other people on your behalf.
Yeah.
It's a little difficult to speak. I can do that.
Yeah.
But
what you should say is, don't come and talk to him. He doesn't want to talk to you.
Well, they already know that.
Well, then what is there to say? What's left?
All right.
If they know enough not to come and bother me and not to look at me or talk to me or try to engage with me in any way.
I was just trying to make your life here a little better, you know?
My life here is fine.
Okay.
People, for the most part, leave me alone.
All right.
Except for Salahini, who bugs me.
Well, isn't that true of pretty much everybody?
Yeah.
I mean, the relationship, that relationship.
But most people have divined the idea that
they're trying to save you, I think is what it is.
Yeah, but I don't want to be saved.
I know that.
Yeah, I want to be left alone.
Right.
Yeah.
Fine with me.
Yeah, we have this extra little bit of time.
I would think,
Do you have any commercials on the show today?
Not
many. Good thing we have Sam Perry to fill the time with, you know. It's good that we have the James Michener of weather aboard today. Because we apparently have no commercials today. But that's good. It's all balancing out, you know. We have these gigantic, highly... Is this another thing you're going to have to smooth over? Is that why you have that expression on your face right now?
Not at all. Everybody in there is pretty much scared of you.
Yeah.
So, because, you know, once in a while you pull like a, flip out a little bit.
And screaming people, yeah. But, we have Sam who basically is doing like sort of chaos there, explaining which butterfly it was flapping its wings in New Guinea that's causing the hurricane here. Well, Smarty Jones is retiring now, too, and he was last seen with Ricky Williams getting high in Nate Newton's van. It's time for Sport à Trois, the very French sports discussion segment of Victor Ronaldinho Dean, Mr. Receivers, and myself, Louis Gascon de la Mer.
And he was the second biggest there.
Right. Welcome to our phone calls right now. I just want to mention on a more trivial note, I saw this movie. I didn't see the whole movie. It was on TV yesterday, and I was kind of walking around the house and... every once in a while, I would glance at the set and still be on. And it certainly is an excellent movie. It's called The Watchers, and it was made in 1988. It's based on a novel by Dean Koontz. And this is the reason it's alarming to me, though. It's the plot is this boy kicks at a stray dog, and he eventually finds out the dog is an ultra-intelligent runaway from a research lab. But they also, at this research lab, are making these super-intelligent, killing, super strong, dog-related, you know, gigantic, ferocious, homicidal, man-eating beast.
Mm-hmm.
And they make this down at Trump's down the road from us, too. And one of them gets out.
I think they've only made a couple.
Yeah, they only made a couple. And one of them gets out in this movie. And, you know, the basic moral of the movie is that you shouldn't smell too much like liver, you know. In your dating life is not a good idea, and certainly if one of these super intelligent homicidal, it's a good movie when the distinguished American says being Michael Ironside, isn't it?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has Michael Ironside ever been in any kind of redeemable project ever? I mean, what's embarrassing is how many movies one has watched that have Michael Ironside in them.
Yeah.
But he's in this one, so you know it's a quality film product.
Oh,
also, it's a 1988 movie, and...
is this a made-for-TV deal, or what?
I'm not sure. Jason Priestley.
Oh.
At that point, undiscovered, Jason Priestley.
Yep.
Plays a boy on a bike.
A boy on a bike?
Plays a boy on a bike. I think he gets beaten.